Kia ora, I'm Rochelle Stewart-Allen.
And I'm Tui Hana Oihia.
And welcome to the Tātou Tātou podcast, kaitiaki kōrero about wellbeing and hauora. So today we're going to have a kōrero with Jerome Meeker from the Cause Collective. So welcome, Jerome. Why don't you introduce yourself?
Tala whalawa everyone, tala whātua whaera ma lumut, but yeah, look whaa longa longa mai whit nei, tai au. Tala whaa, my name is Whaamoetauloa, po e Jerome Meeker, Samoan. My mother came over in 1971, dad came over in 73, got married in 74, had me in 75. Married to a tūhoe Dutch psychologist, Dr. Julie Whaerewetamika, and we have four boys. Well, we've had four boys. Yeah, it's really lovely to be here, and thank you for the invitation to just share some thoughts around hauora.
Kia ora, and welcome to Lofa. It's awesome to have you join us. Thanks for making the extra special effort because there was somewhat travel in your day today to get you here, but in the end, everything aligned, all the aeroplanes and all the taxis aligned, and here you are in front of us. So let's just start a little bit talking about some of the kind of hauora challenges that you've seen across your career and your life that you've seen in both yourself and other people.
Yeah, I think with hauora challenges, there's been a whole bunch, and you know, I'm sort of, when I was even reflecting when I was coming back on the plane, and there's a lot of things that are happening now post-COVID. I think there's a different dynamic, and I think it's almost, you know, I was talking to a friend last night, and like after the Second World War, there wasn't really any help for our soldiers coming back, and there was a decade or two decades of no one knows what happened, and there was kind of silence. And even when we look at some of our fathers, kind of their style, it was because no one wanted to talk. And I think we're going through that post-COVID 3 years late, you know, during it, and there's this kind of the whole mental health, especially for our young people, trying to understand how the impacts of what we had during that 3 years, and then even being able to be what is normal now. And I think for us, even with our work approach, you know, all the sort of, it's normal to work from home now. Unlike before, it was like a disciplinary. If you did work from home, there was no such thing. So I think, what is the new us? And I think with hauora, it's also what is the application of your well-being within our working environment, within our homes, within our families, within our community groups. I think there's a real sort of change, and we're just trying to figure out what that looks like. And I think the challenges have also been exacerbated. There are a lot of 8, 9, 10 deprivation communities that were already struggling before COVID. And I think now there's some big issues that are there, but it's trying to figure that out and help respond with a bit of empathy.
I really like that idea of it's time to pause after COVID and just kind of, I don't know if it's taking stock, but exactly you talking about the world wars, and there was so much silence after that, and there was a kind of, you know, there was baby booms, you know, and people just got on and did it, and you're meant to just suck it up, right? But nobody feels in that place now, all these years later. We're not in that place post-COVID to just go, oh, well, let's just kind of pretend none of that happened and just get on and do it. And also people are still in the middle of that, of the weather events, of the recovery. What does that look like, right? If we pause and we contemplate this kind of incredibly artificial environment that we had over the last 3 years, what does that look like for well-being for all of us to kind of contemplate that, right, and think about the impact of that and not deny it? Because I think you see some people were super keen to get out of lockdown and get back in it and just pretend that nothing happened, but that's not reality, right?
You know, being in the privileged position of being able to work in both corporate wellbeing, community wellbeing, and everything in between, I think what's really interesting is this kind of, we know we were productive and we know that there's been some challenges around isolation for people, but also almost trying to force our way back to what we perceived to be the norm prior to COVID and try to bring that back in. And I'm just like, you can't go back. We've got to go forward. So I agree with you. I think that we're still trying to figure out what that new looks like, what that new way of working, what that new way of being is. But I do think that although we're talking a lot about tini naro, about mental health and wellbeing, I wonder whether we're really facing up to the realities of these past few years, especially with our rangatahi, you know. So I'm a mother of three sons, two boys. One, my older one is in Australia, but two younger ones, 20 and 18. And I know that there's been a definite impact on them. And it just seems to be that whole generation, you know, and I really would implore us to really consider what is the new way moving forward and to embrace it and actually learn from them, not us always tell them, yeah?
Yeah, I totally agree with you in terms of listening and learning from our rangatahi. I think sort of too many times we try and like impart something to them, and you know that every generation has always been quite different. And I think about my boys, and I think about the second eldest. He's kind of gone through sort of puberty, COVID, then, and also a bit of grief. So it's trying to say, well, what is the new normal for him, and how do I meet him? Because I've always had this thing with my boys: I just want you to reach your potential. But what does that look like now after COVID? And, you know, they all are very different and they all respond differently. And it's just trying to figure out, but also listen to where they are. You know, sometimes it can be quite cryptic as a father to try and interpret, you know, especially when saying yes.
What, you mean no, they don't yes, really obviously tell you?
Well, it's they the tell grunting. Their mother, it's I the think. Grunting. I think it's the psychologist side. But they tell, you know, it's trying to figure that out. And there's no manual, but it's just trying to.
You know, and as young Pacifica Māori men, boys, growing up in a world that's often statistically will say that it's up against them from the get-up go, how do you, as a father of Pacifica Māori boys, well, how do you look after your well-being? You know, how do you role model to them? You know, because listening to you today, I caught a plane, I was delayed, I caught a cab, and I was like, yeah, we're all kind of living that life of, you know, this busyness.
Mm.
But when do you, how do you show that you can take those pauses, that you are looking after your haora? So what is it that you do for you?
I try and get a bit of perspective about me and my haora, but also my resilience to be able to serve. And with the Samoan culture, there is that whole thing about the pathway to leadership is to serve. So regardless of what status you hold, it is about the service. And then I think back to sort of the role models, which are my parents and, you know, their hauora and their resilience to be able to work in the factories, to go to church, to look after the kids. You know, Dad would work night shift, take us to school, do church things. And it was, they were very content, but they showed the resilience. And so even through that, with the limited resource, and they really showed their well-being, but also the satisfaction of service.
Yes.
And I think for me, it's, if I have to look at that, it's my satisfaction of being able to serve community, whether it be in a professional capacity or a voluntary. It gives me that sort of drive that actually replenishes my haora, because it's about what is your why, you know, why do you do what you do? Because sometimes when we internalize it too much, then we forget the bigger things. And, you know, Julian, we run a foundation, my son's foundation, and we were able to attend a group called the Grandparents Raising Grandchildren. And when I talk about resilience and hauora and the work that those superheroes do, you just have to, it's about perspective as well. Like, I am busy and I have been fortunate to do things that I do, but there are others that are doing it really hard. And so, you know, even with our foundation of my son that passed away, it's like he would have been 11, 12. There are 11 and 12-year-old kids that are really doing it hard. So that kind of my perspective is like, if I can help them, it replenishes my haora. So my service, which, you know, from my culture, if I'm able to do it, then it kind of helps me just build for the next day. But I mean, I do take a lot of time and I reflect, even like coming on the plane, I make a conscious effort just to kind of check myself and making sure that things are okay. Do I need to go play a bit of rugby, or do I need to sit in the sauna? You know, just things like that. You make it, but it's also just, it's quite organic, but intentional.
I feel like many people that we've interviewed with in these podcasts, you know, the various series, what I've found or observation is that acts of service are almost acts of well-being for self. They say one of the most amazing things you can do for your wellbeing is actually to volunteer or to be of service to others. And so it's interesting that that's, I would say, been a common theme in many of the podcasts.
The help is high, they call
it. Yeah, the help is high.
The help is high because you effectively get dopamine, right, if you do something that's helping others and it makes you feel good out of that. So, yeah, you actually get a chemical high out of it.
But then the concern is that our empathy is also quite high. And then sometimes we can get lost in that serving of others and that empathy we have for others. And then we kind of get like a little bit, oh, hecka, where have we gone?
Yeah, I've put some stops in place, like learning to say no.
Yes.
There are things that are probably, you know, I've just got to prioritize and think about like time management, saying no. But even delegating and building a succession plan, like it shouldn't only be about you as an individual. It should be about maybe this is my season, but who's got the next season and what are you going to do to help? So it has to be a sustainable model of service, right, because you will burn yourself out. And I think it's an ongoing sort of conversation.
How hard is it for you to say leo? You know, when it's your own, I'm talking about now.
with the Pacific community or my Samoan church community, it is, it's very hard for me to say no. Not because I feel compelled, but I just know it's important for me to give back.
Yeah.
So you were talking about this idea of succession planning other people as well and helping bring them through. Does that help you feel that you don't have to be all things to all people? You know, you feel like you've got your channel, but then also you're building other channels as well of people coming through.
Yeah, I've always made a conscious effort to try and find people that have that potential to mentor, but also know, like I've got it in one of my mentees. We always catch up for a coffee just to see how he is. But I can kind of see him to be a CEO. I can see him holding really sort of massive organizations. But it goes back to what is his why? So it's his EQ and his IQ. Is he competent, but also can he lead with that service and remember? Judge Ida Malosi used it really well, or did it a bit of a comparison back in 2005 at a conference I attended, and talked about a bus. She's driving the bus, but you're taking everyone with you. I'm kind of that leadership style. I don't like to kind of drive as an individual, and also I encourage leaders to do that. So hence why the whole sort of succession planning, delegating.
That's not a common thing. Can I just point out that's not a common thing for leaders to do that? And I think part of the burnout for leaders in communities are often because they feel like they've got all the responsibility and they don't have anyone to hand on. I think that's a really interesting whakaaro because you're effectively showing a style of leadership that would help relieve some of the pressure that are on people who are in communities if they could also see that they could bring forth other people to be taking over and effectively making themselves redundant, right? Hopefully that's the end goal.
Yeah, even that whole philosophical debate around leaders and leadership.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some people don't like to have people that are smarter than them and will kind of step, you know, be able to do better than. And I'm that kind of leader that I'm not insecure enough to be able to promote strong, smart people and really cheer them on. But that whole thing about having a really good heart to serve community and not forget your community is a bottom line for me.
Yeah.
So if I feel that they're just careerists, I don't bother trying to, because it's, you know.
So you want that servant leadership, right, coming through?
Well, because my parents came here for a better life for me. It's about paying it forward. It's about looking after community. And, you know, back then we were new migrants. We've got new migrant communities coming into Aotearoa. We've got to keep doing that. And it's about just understanding that you have to go back. And even that's why a lot of us do the voluntary stuff, right, is because as much as we don't have time, but that small bit like having a coffee with someone or just ringing up or texting, see how they are, it means a lot for a lot of people. And post-COVID, like we were just discussing, it helps, you know, it all helps. So.
And I think you make a, you know, it's interesting because there's been a lot of kōrero around IQ versus EQ and the combination of IQ and EQ. And I think that that's another shift that we're seeing post-COVID is how that emotional vulnerability you know, it's a bit of a word at the moment, you know, talking about your karearoto, your feelings and emotions without judgment, without bias, and without kind of like, oh, what's that about, you know? I really welcome that. And then there's that manager versus leader, but the expectation of being a leader within our communities can sometimes feel a little heavy because we're trying to build that legacy. We're wanting to leave that legacy for others. We know how hard our parents worked. We know where we've come from, the realities of my father never having shoes and having to run from cowpat to cowpat to keep his feet warm, one of 11. You know, like we know all those stories. And so we want to do better than better. You know, we make them prouder than proudest, you know, like, and all of that. But in all of that, you've got to be able to say, oh, actually, I'm having a real shit day today. You know, I need a mental health and wellbeing day because it kind of gives permissions for others to do it.
Oh, absolutely. And I think for us, it is about identifying where you're at in terms of your own well-being, you know, and your own hauora, because you can't give what you don't have, right? And I think for me, I've always tried to use my parents as the giant. So, you know, it's all sort of that working through. The emotional intelligence is a really important bit for us as well, because like what my sort of level of being able to give, I shouldn't expect that on anyone else. But I've always said to people, I won't ask you to do something if I won't do it. Around that enabler and hindrance, it's actually something I've raised in senior leadership teams and just saying, you're either an enabler or you're a hindrance. If you're a hindrance, then get out of the way, you know. And through our own sort of working life and even in terms of leadership journeys, we've had those people, you know, and I'm always encouraging people to be an enabler, you know, look at ways to make people succeed, because when they succeed, you succeed. And when you succeed, your community gets the best of them as well. So, yeah, I always enjoy sort of those philosophical debates around leadership and managers, enablers, and, you know, other hindrances. And it's an ongoing part, but as long as our why aligns with everything we do, you will never go wrong. And you know, you've probably the application of the way that you've done it sometimes could be questionable, but you can never question your values and principles. There's a Samoan saying, actually, it's called Tumol Fatvei e Swilfanga, which means your principles and values will remain, but the application will vary. And sometimes people start varying their principles and values based around their status and their job and their leadership journey.
That's so visible, isn't it? When you see people turning, you know, you can kind of see the turn, the motivation turns. And then, I don't know, it's quite disturbing when I see that, because I feel like the driver to get them so far was their values and their principles, and then suddenly they're like, I'm a bit flashy. Yeah.
I think what's in, you know, but I know, like, you know, if I was to think about, when you go home to your marae, you can be the flashiest damn person outside of those marae gates, but once you walk on, here's your, well, I've admitted this several times, I do not do te tau tanga, okay, because I work in the dining room. I love serving people, kai, me ai, you know, that's my place. Yeah. I love being in there, right? I really, really love it. That is my place, and everyone knows it. But I'm no longer a director or whatever it is, I am just simply Tuihana who's here to serve others. It's the same I often find when you know, go to a Samoan event of some kind. Yeah, you can be as flash as you want outside of there, but when you're in, you are, you know.
Yeah.
And I think that's incredibly grounding.
Absolutely.
And it just reminds you of who you really are almost, eh? Like who you really are at the heart. You know, you can have all the titles, you can own however many homes, drive whatever car, but it doesn't matter when you're in, when you're on there.
Yeah, because I remember people used to always compliment me, and one of the most important lessons I learned, the only compliments I should really take on board is my parents and wife, and even the kids as well, because anyone can say you're really good at this, and you're really good, you know, like, even like when I used to do sort of music, and think, oh, you're so good, la, la, la. And then it was like, actually, what your parents say and what your family says is really matters. And it's about being honest, because they do ground you.
It's like my father,
so what are you doing, game bump?
It's like, oh my God, you know, what are you doing, game bump? Yeah. And you're like, yeah. Okay. You know, that's keeping it real. Those conversations are absolutely keeping it real.
Yeah.
But I think too, it's when your aunties, I recently have just flown back from Melbourne visiting family. My family have been there for 45 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, long time. I said to my aunties, I hope I've made you proud. And they're going to give you a straight up answer, right? And when they hear yes, when you hear that yes, whatever they've said after the yes, you don't remember, you just know that they said yes and that they are. And that's actually, you know, gauge of, for me, of, oh, okay, I have, you know, it's all good. Your aunties are telling you, your uncles are telling you, and your cousins.
Yeah.
You know, they keep it real for you.
Absolutely.
And I think this conversation is all around our haora, although it's a different perspective because, you know, people have this real kind of stereotype around what haora or well-being should look like, feel like, you know, smell like, taste like, sound like. But yet, in talking to you today, it's a whole different perspective of haora. But I get it. You get it. It is about serving others. It is about giving back to others because that's what fills your heart. That's what fills your soul, fills your whole being.
Mm. When my kids were younger, I really loved being a father. That was quite therapeutic for me to just be a really good father and, yeah, just trying to do family time.
Nice.
And what are some of the changes that you've made through your journey, you know, your well-being journey? What are some of the things that you do differently now that you didn't used to do?
I've been a creature of habit, actually. So when I first started and I worked in the trade union movement for 15 years, the last day before Christmas, I used to turn up my music and just like yell. Because, you know, the job is so, it's dealing with conflict resolution. It can be at times quite adversarial. And it takes a big toll on your life in that. But I always used to make an effort to just chill and, you know, then say celebrate, but also be really thankful and appreciative you've got a job. And then thinking about the lives that you impacted. So I've always kind of used that kind of just to reflect, being, you know, find a way to celebrate. And me just patting myself on the back, showing everyone that I'm here. But it was just a good way to get closure before I went to my holiday. The last 3 years have been pretty full on because of COVID. So
it's really refreshing to hear that because we're not great at celebrating our successes or our wins. The focus often goes to what we didn't do, what we haven't done, what we should have, could have, would have. Yeah, so it's really lovely to hear that that's what you do.
Yeah. But it's just by myself.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, it's not like, do you know what I did kind of thing. It's kind of like I've been able to last the year.
Yeah.
I've been able to, whether it be get a pay increase for someone at the time, help save someone's job. You know, it's sort of, yeah, you kind of think. You know, really,
it's like a ritual though, right?
Yeah.
Nice. You kind of created your own ritual for it. Yeah, nice.
And even with all the different jobs I've had, board positions and whatever, it's just been that I've just got to be really appreciative and, you know, just even being able to know that you've lived another day sort of thing. So it's just perspective and just that sort of heart of gratitude as well.
And patting yourself on the back.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't always come externally, right?
No.
But there's nothing to say that we can't do that to ourselves, right? Count it and say, hey, man, that was awesome. I did a great thing. You know, and well done. And you have your moment in your own little sun and then move on, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And sometimes when I'm in a plane, which is quite regular lately, I just look at the clouds and I just think, thank you for just being able to be here. Yeah, sort of.
Especially when the sun's setting or the sun's rising and you get that kind of colour.
I know it's first world problems, but I do try and get that.
I always remember when I was young and I first started doing that when I was flying in my late kind of teens, early 20s, and I wanted to kind of just leap. That you just look like you could just leap across these kind of incredible clouds because there's just such a view up there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really love that.
Again, it's a very real view of the world, right?
Yeah.
And the peace.
Yeah.
When you look out that window.
No buildings.
There's no building. There's no busyness.
No
it's
cars.
Just pretty peaceful out there.
Mm.
Yeah, it's quite lovely. Mm. Yeah. I just want to actually take a moment to mihi to you and to your wife and for the loss of your son. I can't even imagine what that must be like. So, yeah, it's mihi to you and to your family.
Thank you.
And clearly the amazing work that you're both doing. And thank you for your amazing contribution that you make to community and for being the papa that you are and obviously the husband that you are. And, yeah, just thank you for your amazing whakaaro and kōrero today.
Mm. I try not to mention because I do get a bit teary-eyed, but, yeah, just Cyrus.
Mm-hmm.
Kia ora.
Kia ora.
Thanks so much, Jerome.
Cheers, thank you.
You've been listening to Tātou Tātou, a podcast about kaitiaki kōrero and our wellbeing hauora. You can find us online at huie.org.nz/tātou tātou. That's huie.org.nz/tātou tātou. You can find me online, Rochelle Stewart Allen, at theNGOcoach.com.
Oh, and you can find Tuihana Oi here at www.wewellbeing.co.nz or check out I Am Tuihana on Instagram. Kia ora.
Tātou Tātou is brought to you by Huie Community Aotearoa, Volunteering New Zealand, Centre for Social Impact, and Wu Wellbeing.